learned today the president did indeed alter that map himself with a Sharpie.
The Washington Post soon talked to a White House official who confirmed it was Trump who did it, saying, no one else writes like that on a map with a black Sharpie, and of course they don't.
He's even drawing lies now, okay? Who'd have guessed the guy who only signs things in Sharpie and ordered special Sharpies with his name on them is the guy who wrote on the map with a Sharpie. You know how you can't leave a toddler alone for 3 minutes or he'll draw all over the walls? That's our president. And once again today, our commander-in-chief meteorologist doubled down. He wrote, the fake news media was fixated on the fact that I properly said at the beginnings of Hurricane Dorian that in addition to Florida and other states, Alabama may also be grazed or hit. They went crazy, hoping against hope that I made a mistake, which I didn't. Which you did, by the way. Check out maps. This nonsense has never happened to another president. 4 days of corrupt reporting, still without an apology.
On Wednesday, the president tweeted a map trying again to prove his incorrect point. But weather experts say the president was using an out-of-date map. There were much fresher forecasts.
President Trump tweeted this. It's called a spaghetti model. It shows every possible path the hurricane is forecasted to take.
Those spaghetti models were from August the 28th. By the time the president tweeted about Alabama at 10:51 a.m. on Sunday, the forecast track had moved well east.
The New York Times reported that Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross threatened to fire top employees at NOAA after its Birmingham office contradicted the president's claim that Dorian might strike Alabama. And that story broke after the Washington Post reported earlier that NOAA's chief scientist will investigate why the agency backed the president over its own experts on Dorian.
Yes, it turns out President Trump is so embarrassed by his hurricane blunder that his administration threatened to fire any weather officials who wouldn't back up his alternative facts.
Trump has tried to muddy the waters and confuse everyone by making this as complicated as possible. So let's keep it very simple. September 1st, Trump tweeted that Alabama will most likely be hit much harder than anticipated. And then 20 minutes later, the National Weather Service in Birmingham, Alabama, tweeted Alabama will not see any impacts from Dorian. And as we learned this weekend, that correction wasn't the National Weather Service going out of their way to embarrass Trump. They had to issue that correction specifically in response to Alabama residents who were freaked out by the president's tweet. The Washington Post reported that the Birmingham office sent the tweet after receiving a flurry of phone calls from concerned residents following Trump's message. We're now at the point where the president is scaring people for no reason. The president is obsessing over a map he doctored to defend an embarrassing mistake that he is now repeatedly lying about. Almost nothing that comes out of his mouth is true. In fact, at any time he speaks, the odds that he's lying are
a 95% chance probability.
Like when Trump is like 100 years old, he'd be laying on his deathbed surrounded by the people he loves and Eric. And he'll still be like, I was right about Alabama. Beep. And then CNN will report on it, and then Trump will come back from the dead. Ah, I was right. I told you I was right. I was right.
All available forces have been brought into play. Now we can only watch and wait. Of tension, the turning point is reached. Latest reports indicate the control strategy is successful. At last, the high pressure ridge has settled along the coast, forming an invisible wall of safety. The storm is over.
It's another Monday in the Trump era, which means we all awoke to another fever dream of cruelty, stupidity, and corruption. Just in the last few days, the president launched a deranged attack on John Legend and Chrissy Teigen. A House panel is investigating the military's use of Trump-owned property in Scotland. The president ignited bipartisan fury when he announced that he invited the Taliban to Camp David just days before the anniversary of 9/11, while simultaneously canceling that meeting and upending months of delicate peace talks.
On Saturday, he wrote,
"Unbeknownst to almost everyone, the major Taliban leaders and, separately, the president of Afghanistan were going to secretly meet with me at Camp David on Sunday."
Yes.
Only Trump would brag about a meeting he didn't have. Anyway, they were coming to the United States tonight. Unfortunately, in order to build false leverage, they admitted to an attack in Kabul that killed one of our great soldiers and 11 other people. I immediately canceled the meeting and called off peace negotiations. What kind of people would kill so many in order to seemingly strengthen their bargaining position? The Taliban, maybe? I don't know. Hey, you know the people you invited to Camp David? Donald Trump invited the Taliban to Camp David 3 days before 9/11.
Does Donald Trump not know what 9/11 is?
I was down there, and I watched our police and our firemen down on 7/11, down the World Trade Center, right after it came down.
Next month, he's taking Al-Qaeda to Six Flags. Did you know that? In 2012, Trump tweeted, "While Barack Obama is slashing the military, he's also negotiating with our sworn enemy, the Taliban, who facilitated 9/11. That was written by the man who not only did he invite the Taliban over for a sleepover, last week he slashed $3.6 billion from the military to build his wall. Everything he does, you could find a tweet where he says the opposite. It's like he went back in time to screw with himself. It is... He really might be Biff from Back to the Future.
Then tell me, future boy, who's president of the United States?
Instead of meeting with the Taliban yesterday, Trump spent the day lashing out at John Legend and Chrissy Teigen. For real, apparently he's watching a town hall event on NBC last night, probably waiting to hear his name mentioned. And he was upset that John Legend didn't give him a shout out for the bipartisan criminal justice reform bill that he signed. So he got out his thumbs and he wrote, "Guys like boring musician John Legend and his filthy-mouthed wife," who wasn't even there, by the way, "are talking about how great it is, but I didn't see them around when we needed help getting it passed." His filthy-mouthed what? What is... We can't have all these filthy-mouthed women around when the Taliban is coming over, guys. Trump hates women who talk dirty unless they're spanking him with a Forbes magazine while they're doing it. So Chrissy Teigen responded to this. She wrote, "LOL, what a ass bitch."
Trump's gotten a lot of criticism because Mike Pence and members of the U.S. military have been staying at Trump properties over in Europe. People say that as commander-in-chief, Trump is self-dealing to his own businesses. But Trump responded, "Yeah, but I'm rich.
I own a lot of different places. Soon you'll find that out. Because I'll be at some point prior to the election, I'm going to be giving out a financial report of me. And it'll be extremely complete. I'm going to give out my financial condition. And you'll be extremely shocked that the numbers are many, many times what you think.
And they will be only the best numbers, okay? We're talking five, couple of eights in there. Will there be a three? Got to tune in to find out. One number that is certainly going to be in there is Threven. Threven, the secret number only rich people get to use.
Then Trump got everyone pumped up for tonight's rally.
We're going to be doing a big rally tonight, totally sold out, as always. It's every single one, totally sold out. There'll be a lot of people outside trying to get in.
Oh, yeah, the people, they'll be all out there with their ears pressed against the door, trying to make out tonight's hideous, bloodthirsty chant. Spoiler, it's steal her car, steal her car. And I want you to know right now, I do not approve.
You know, I have to say, of all the interesting things I've been hashtag blessed to cover when it comes to our president, I never thought the weather would be one of them. I really didn't. But once again, our commander-in-chief meteorologist has contradicted the weather. Trump took his show on the road last night. He hosted a pep rally in Fayetteville, North Carolina, where he claimed aboard Air Force One that people were lined up waiting in the rain to see him, even though it wasn't raining at all.
We have now people standing in line trying to get into the arena, and I will tell you that they are soaking wet because Roy and everybody just walked into the plane, and you folks were wet. There's bad weather out there.
No, they weren't. They were just, if they were wet, they were just sweating because you're the president. And I still don't understand why he would say this, because by all accounts, it was not raining in Fayetteville. And just to make sure of that, we pulled the local weather forecast for Monday, September 9th.
Fayetteville today hitting a high of 92. Now, that is a bit above the average of 86. Morning low also running above average at 74. And also no precipitation reported at the Fayetteville Fayetteville Gauge on Monday.
No precipitation reported, but... I knew it was only a matter of time before he told us the sky isn't blue. But there's a perfectly simple explanation for why Trump said his supporters in North Carolina were soaking wet when they weren't. He thought he was in Alabama. There's a hurricane there, you know.
Every day we're making good on the motto, promises made, promises kept. In fact, we are keeping even more promises by far than we made or than we promised. So many more.
Trump is also continuing his use of the presidency to enrich himself. Last week, Trump reportedly encouraged Vice President Mike Pence to stay at his golf resort in Ireland. And on Friday, it was reported that an Air Force crew made a stop at Trump's Scottish resort. Democrats are investigating whether these obviously corrupt practices violate the Constitution. So Trump lashed out again this morning on Twitter, distancing himself from both incidents.
Quote, I had nothing to do with the decision of our great Vice President Mike Pence to stay overnight at one of the Trump-owned resorts in Doonbeg, Ireland.
I know nothing about an Air Force plane landing in an airport, which I don't own and have nothing to do with it, near Turnberry Resort, which I do own in Scotland, and filling up with fuel with the crew staying overnight at Turnberry. They have good taste. Nothing to do with me.
Wow, he is tap dancing faster than a flaming dancer. Also, you can't just tweet, in all caps, nothing to do with me, right after you admit they stayed at your hotel and you put in parentheses, they have good taste.
Can you speak to your involvement in the vice president's plans to stay at a Trump property in Ireland?
Well, I had no involvement other than it's a great place. It's Doonbeg. I own it. It's in Ireland. It's beautiful. It's wonderful. I don't suggest anything. I don't suggest it, nor did I with... the attorney general. I never spoke to the attorney general about using my hotel. I have a lot of hotels all over the place, and people use them because they're the best. I mean, you know, they're the best. But he's using the hotel, and people like my product. What can I tell you? Can't help it. But, you know, and I guess they say we want to stay at a place that's better than someplace else.
I have never been more grateful for the president's pettiness and stupidity, because today he was stupidly petty enough to save us from a very smart warmonger. I'm talking about National Security Advisor John Bolton. Today, with no public preamble, the president tweeted, I informed John Bolton last night that his services are no longer needed at the White House. And another another Trumpling bites the dumpling of dirt. Trump goes through staffers like a high 17-year-old goes through Little Debbie Swiss rolls. We knew there was bound to be conflict between these two guys, like two rams butting heads. There's going to happen eventually. We knew this because Trump was very down on our Middle Eastern wars, whereas Bolton had never seen a patch of sand he didn't want to make glow. In fact, Trump has long complained privately that Mr. Bolton was too willing to get the United States into another war, with Trump saying behind the scenes, if it was up to John, we'd be in four wars now. And I can't have that. I'm already in so many wars. I got trade war, cupcake war. I'm in a flame war with Chrissy Teigen. And World War II, comma, what if the Nazis had won? Plus, back in May, Trump said this.
John is a, he has strong views on things, but that's okay. I actually temper John, which is pretty amazing, isn't it? Nobody thought that was going to happen. I'm the one that tempers him.
So Donald Trump is the voice of reason?
John, you're talking crazy, okay? Now, can we please get back to discussing windmill cancer?
Trump concluded,
and therefore, dot, 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 I asked John for his resignation, which was given to me this morning.
Okay. President's making a simple statement of fact, so it's probably a lie. Because 12 minutes after Trump's announcement, Bolton tweeted, I offered to resign last night, and President Trump said, let's talk about it tomorrow.
Oh, John. Yes, John, we'll talk about it tomorrow. Now, I want you to look into the distance while I tell you about rabbits.
Steinbeck reference.
Yeah. The announcement was a complete surprise, especially since the tweet came about 90 minutes before Bolton was expected to appear at a press briefing with Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin.
Trump promised, I will be naming a new national security advisor next week.
Who will it be? Well, we know Trump picked Bolton because he saw him on Fox News. So get ready for national security advisor, my pillow guy.
We may have to go for an extra term. Oh, they're going crazy. Tomorrow you're going to see headlines. Trump wants an extra term. I told you. He wants an extra term, ladies and gentlemen. We told you. He's a dictator. We told you. No. I'm only kidding.
The preceding show was recorded at Wave Farms WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.
I got a stack of records here, a stack of records there. I got records scattered all over everywhere, but I'm looking for one that I can't find. The one where the guitar plays so fine, 'cause that's the only song that my baby likes to hear.
Turn out to the WGXC Record Fair, Sunday, September 15th, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Basilica Hudson, 110 South Front Street in Hudson, near the Amtrak station. There are still a few spots left for vendors. If you'd like to get a table, email info@wgxc.org. WGXC Record Fair coincides with the Basilica Soundscape, September 13th through 15th, an immersive, innovative weekend of art, music, and culture. Turn out for the WGXC Record Fair, Sunday, September 15th, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Basilica Hudson.
This is Nature Note with Angela Gibbons of Earthwalk, Vermont.
Today I'm feeling thankful for black bears. This time of year, they're trying to pile on fat for the long winter ahead. Mary Holland is a nature photographer and author of Naturally Curious. She writes, during this period of gorging, black bears consume large quantities of fruits, berries, nuts, grasses, roots, and insects. Some of the bears' favorite things to eat are the larvae and pupae of ants, which have a high content of fat and protein. Mary Holland has confirmed research that black bears will dig up as many as 200 ant colonies a day, flipping rocks, moss, and leaf litter over and tearing apart logs, stumps, and snags. Bears also love berries. However, since the summer berry season is coming to a close, bears are beginning to head for stands of oak, beech, and hickory to look for nuts. In an effort to store as much energy as possible, they will eat up to 24 hours a day. Vermont Fish and Wildlife warns us that bears can also be attracted to other foods such as birdseed, garbage, and pet food. For a healthy bear population, wild bears need to be foraging for wild food. So let's not leave food out. Next time you are out for a walk in the wild, look for bear sign, a pile of scat filled with crushed acorns, claw marks on a beech tree, a torn apart log, big tracks in the mud, or just maybe you'll be lucky enough to get a glimpse of a wild black bear.
Nature Note comes to you weekly from earthwalkvermont.org and Goddard College Community Radio.
Hi, I'm Amy Halloran, here with another food diary. And today with me is Eliza Hunter, sourdough baker. Welcome, Eliza.
Thank you, Amy.
Thanks for coming on. Sourdough September, for people who don't know, is a British concept of education about sourdough to try to get more people aware of what true sourdough is rather than supermarket sourdough. And there's lots of opportunities in the UK and beyond to experience sourdough yourself. Ours is coming up on September 21st at the Troy Waterfront Farmers Market. The whole time the market is open, we're going to have a little sourdough table, and I'm going to be making sourdough English muffins and giving away free sourdough starter and a fact sheet to get you rolling on sourdough. And Eliza, could you please introduce yourself to this great radio land and tell us how you got into baking first and then sourdough baking?
Sure. So I initially got interested in baking because I found that I loved to eat bread, which is probably the way a lot of people start. And so I wanted to learn how to bake the bread. So I started with an internship in New York City at a French bakery, Maison Kaiser. And from there, I was pastry chef at a couple of restaurants and then worked at a few other bread bakeries. One of the most recent ones was Berkshire Mount Bakery in Massachusetts, where everything that they make is sourdough-based, even down to their croissants. And so my interest in sourdough really came about mostly because of the flavor. I really loved kind of like the tanginess. And then when I learned that it was a complete wild fermentation of the microorganisms and the yeast that's found in the flour and in the air, that just was like so incredibly cool to me. So I just started trying at home and was baking like 3 loaves of bread every single day in my free time and just really loving it and having so much fun learning about it. So I've been baking bread professionally now for about 7 years. And I still am as enthusiastic and passionate about it as I was at the beginning. And there's still so much to learn about it.
Wow. And so where in this 7-year journey did sourdough enter?
In the first year.
Wow.
Yeah. The bakery in New York City, they use a lot of yeast, but they also had a handful of loaves that were all wild fermented. Using sourdough starter, so using their pain au levain. And so I think when I was even in New York City commuting an hour and I was still maintaining my own little sourdough starter at home and baking at home while I was like on my days off and trying to kind of replicate what we were doing at work.
So I'm sure there are people out there who have no idea what it means to maintain a sourdough starter, wild yeasts, all of these things. Can you explain to people what it's like to take care of the fermenting basis, the leavener?
Yeah, sure. It can be as labor intensive as you want it or as lax as you need it to be. It's pretty flexible, but the basic process is taking flour and water and mixing them together and letting them sit out, typically at room temperature. And then that is, there's a whole bunch of stuff that's going on a biological and chemical level. And once the mixture starts frothing and bubbling and starting to smell ripe, then you know that you've kind of harvested or you've captured some of these microorganisms that are going to help leaven your bread. And so you need to maintain that starter, because after a certain amount of time, those bubbles are going to deflate and you're going to lose your oomph for your recipe. And so you need to keep adding more flour and water to it on a regular basis. And some people do that daily. Some people do it multiple times a day. Some people do it once a week. And there's little tips that you can learn to help to figure out how you can fit maintaining the starter into your lifestyle.
Right. So there's tips on weekend baking. I certainly bake once a week, and I keep my starter in the refrigerator. During that week, I take it out on a Friday, start feeding it so that by Saturday it's back to its muscular self and it can do the leavening that yeast would normally do. I prefer sourdough baking now because it's kind of like harnessing magic in your house. And once you get, baking with any kind of leavener, baking powder, baking soda, eggs, whipping eggs. It's magic. It's alchemy that we're performing. But there's something really amazing about dipping into the sourdough tradition that is really quite addictive. It's like taking a train and you can't get off.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel the same way. Yeah.
That's great. So do you see, do you have any plans for baking coming up?
Yeah, so right now I'm not currently working for an employer, but I rather am trying to collaborate with some local businesses and farms in hopes to create a community-supported baker program. So basically like once a week or like I would come up with a set schedule and members would then pick up a loaf of bread or a sourdough pizza crust or some sort of baked good on a weekly basis. And so if I collaborate with, say, a farm who has an existing community-supported agriculture program, then that reaches a broader amount of people to then kind of inform them on what sourdough baking is all about and how you can use it in different ways, and just to kind of know that I am providing really good quality bread that's healthy and tastes great to the community. And that's really important to me.
That's great. And there's a big tradition of CSBs, as they're known, partnering with existing CSAs, because you have a captive audience of interested eaters. And it's a great way to for bakers to control their baking and reach an audience.
Oh, yeah.
That's great. So we will reach our audience on September 21st at the Troy Waterfront Farmers Market. Thank you, Eliza.
Yes, you're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
Sure thing. This has been Amy Halloran with another Food Diary.
T-minus 5, T-minus 4.
The sound T-minus you are hearing three, is the final countdown T-minus to an experimental atomic T-minus blast, one. The most awesome, devastating power known to mankind.
Radioactive fallout, that deadly byproduct of a nuclear attack, will kill literally millions of unprotected families in the event of an atomic attack. Is your family protected? Do you have a fallout shelter?
Now, Survive All Shelters offer an economic, do-it-yourself fallout shelter.
Constructed of combination steel and concrete block and civil defense approved, a Survive All Shelter can be assembled in a weekend's time.
Put your time to good use. Assemble a fallout shelter that can save your family from deadly nuclear fallout.
See a Survive All Shelter today.
this is Danette Gorman from HelpSyriasKids.org. We are connecting the Hudson community with a Syrian refugee camp in Katarmaya, Lebanon. You're listening to WGXC ACRA.
Honey, did you know the Rolof Jansen Community Library serves Ankrum, Copake, and Hillsdale?
As a matter of fact, I did know that. Ask me another.
Did you know that the Rojan Library has thousands of books, audiobooks, DVDs, and music CDs you can enjoy for free?
Yep, I knew that too.
Did you know that the Rojan Library puts on dozens of special programs like concerts and lectures, story time for kids, and seminars on computer skills and estate planning?
Uh-huh.
Well, Smarty Pants, is there anything about the Rojan Library you don't know?
Yeah, how do they get all that great stuff done with just three employees?
It's all about the volunteers. The library depends on volunteers for everything from working the circulation desk to staffing special events. They can always use more help.
Sounds like fun. How can I become a volunteer?
Just go to the library's website at rojanlibrary.org and click on the volunteer tab.
Hey, I knew that.
Sure you did.
WGXE underwriting support is provided in part by Lumberyard, presenting the Family Festival for a Sustainable Earth, an afternoon dedicated to the environment and our changing climate. Free dance class, films by John Bauermaster, and interactive art exhibit, Tarnished Nature, Erasable Art. Sunday, September 15th at Lumberyard. Information at lumberyard.org.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Michael Waldholtz of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Meet the Palestinian teenager who beat U.S. deportation. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan in our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast. Ismail Ajawi, a 17-year-old Palestinian student who grew up in a refugee camp in Lebanon, had achieved something remarkable, admission to Harvard University with a full scholarship. One can only imagine his feelings as he landed in the United States August 23rd at Boston Logan International Airport. But he didn't get far. He was pulled aside by U.S. Customs and Border Protection officers and later described being questioned about his religious beliefs and practices. He was forced to surrender his phone and computer for examination, after which a border officer yelled at him, saying they had found social media posts that were critical of the U.S., not from him, but from some of his friends. With that, Ismail's visa was rescinded, and he was deported to Lebanon.
My name is Ismail Ajawi. I'm 17 years old. I scored the highest marks in biology in the South region in the official Lebanese baccalaureate and the 8th overall in Lebanon. I also scored the highest marks in the brevet examination in the South region and received a scholarship to study biophysics at Harvard University. I aim to double major and to study medicine in the future.
That's Ismail Ajawi in a video produced by UNRWA, the United Nations Relief and Works Agency for Palestine Refugees. UNRWA runs over 700 schools for more than 500,000 students in the Palestinian territories and in Palestinian refugee camps in Lebanon, Jordan, and Syria. UNRWA provides health care at scores of clinics and additional social services for the Palestinian refugee population. Ismail Ajawi continued,
"The environment in school and in the camp is very challenging. Overpopulation is a big issue in the camp. The houses are too close to each other. In this atmosphere, there's no privacy for Palestinian students to study. Every year, these limited opportunities decrease. This is my school, the UNRWA Deir Yassin Secondary Boys School. The times I spent here were both tiring and fun. I tell my schoolmates to put a lot of effort into their studies and to work hard so that they can fulfill their dreams just like I did."
Ismail's treatment at Logan Airport in Boston and his summary deportation provoked outrage from fellow and sister students at Harvard, to the Harvard president, to international organizations. Summer Lopez of the free speech organization PEN America wrote that Ajawi should be prevented from taking his place at Harvard because of his own political speech would be alarming. That he should be denied this opportunity based on the speech of others is downright lawless, she said. A diverse coalition of student and community groups organized a petition demanding Ismail be admitted to the U.S., which thousands of people signed. One of Ismail's new classmates is David Hogg, who survived last year's Parkland, Florida school massacre and went on to become a prominent gun control advocate. Hogg tweeted, "I cried reading this. The joy and excitement of moving into Harvard today was stolen from my classmate, Ismail B. Ajawi." Ismail was supported in his studies by the U.S.-based nonprofit organization Amideast.
Ismail himself benefited from what are known as opportunity grants. That is, he went in Beirut to a competitive college club that helped coach him on how you apply to American university, how you can present yourself. He had to do, you know, he is a self-made man, but we had to teach him, you know, how to make himself, make Harvard and other schools aware of his abilities. We have 53 other Palestinians currently in the U.S. studying at the undergraduate level who've gone through similar programs. In fact, we have one young man in Gaza from beach camp going to Stanford this year. We have another woman from Gaza going to Smith College in Massachusetts. And I could go on.
That's Theodore Katouf, president and CEO of Amideast and a former U.S. ambassador to the United Arab Emirates and Syria, speaking on the Democracy Now! NewsHour. Ironically, Ismail benefited from a U.S. government opportunity grant that funded some of his college prep activities. Just over a year ago, the Trump administration announced it was going to cancel U.S. payments to UNRWA, which amount to $360 million of the aid agency's $1.2 billion annual budget. While a consortium of 42 nations and groups work to fill the gap,
we continue feeling this hit of losing our biggest donor.
Matthias Schmala is director of UNRWA operations, speaking to us from Gaza City on the Democracy Now! NewsHour.
This is a situation in which most Palestine children, Palestine refugee children, find themselves in. So the situation is similar to that of Ismail in that they have the benefit of getting an education through the United Nations, through the UNRWA schools, but similar also, sadly, in that the opportunities are far and few between in terms of getting out.
Amity's head, Ted Katouf, credits both the work of Harvard and the U.S. Embassy in Beirut for quickly restoring Ismail's visa, allowing him to return to Massachusetts to begin college just in time for classes. While Ismail Ajawi finally made it to school, the situation for Palestinians continues to deteriorate. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has promised, if reelected next week, to annex at least a third of the West Bank, further crushing any hopes of a viable Palestinian state. In the Gaza Strip, during the Great March of Return that's been going on since March 2018, over 7,400 peaceful protesters have been injured with live ammunition fired by the Israeli military. At least 210 Palestinians have been killed, including children and medical personnel. The siege of Gaza must be lifted, and students from there, the West Bank, and from refugee camps in the surrounding area must be free to study, at home or abroad. The injustice Ismail Ajawi suffered at the hands of Logan Airport's federal agents must be fully investigated and prevented from happening again. I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
WGXE welcomes audio responses from listeners. Anyone can call and leave a message with WGXE, and we'll play it on the air. Call 518-291-WGXE and leave up to a 3-minute message for airplay. Hear something you disagree with? Want to speak out on an issue? Plug your band's show? Let your neighbors know something important? Call 518-291-9492 and leave a 3-minute message anytime about any issue. That number again is 518-291-WGXE.
518-291-9492. Hi. On Phil Grant, when he does the weather, on one segment, the sunrise and sunset, he don't do that anymore. Why not? It's very important when it comes to the weather. Thank you.
Hi, I was calling about the inaugural program of Ukulele Unlimited. I loved it, and I hope to listen to it again next month. Thank you. My name is Angela Janicki.
They begun what was to become known on the lips of horrified hipsters and capable cops as
some assembly required.
When I hit the club, all the girls show me love. Show me wine at the bar, got drank by the jug. In the VIP with the chicks and the drugs. This a TIP, Bun D and Slim Thug. We blowing purple stuff.
Bring 'em out, bring 'em out.
We pouring purple stuff.
Bring 'em out, bring 'em out.
DJ, that's my DJ.
Bring 'em out, bring 'em out.
DJ, that's my DJ.
Bring 'em out, bring 'em out.
DJ, that's my DJ.
Bring 'em out, bring 'em out.
DJ, that's my DJ.
Bring 'em out, bring 'em out.
DJ, that's my DJ.
Girl Talk here on Some Assembly Required off of the 2006 illegal art release Night Ripper. That track was titled That's My DJ. I just got that CD in the mail and I just interviewed Girl Talk's Greg Gillis on the telephone. So we're going to be hearing from that interview this episode along with a bunch of tracks off of his three illegal art releases. So stay tuned for that. If you're new to the show, Girl Talk fits in pretty well around here because each CD is chock full of sounds appropriated from the media environment, mainly pop music, in fact. We usually focus on a broad spectrum of recycled sounds here on Some Assembly Required when we're not focusing on one specific artist. We play tape manipulations, digital deconstructions, and turntable creations. Check us out online at some-assembly-required.net. Stay tuned for the Some Assembly Required interview with Girl Talk. First, let's get things started with a track off of his debut release. Here's Girl Talk with Let's Start This Party Right on Some Assembly Required.
We'll be right back.
Some Assembly Required.
First record was released 2002, and I think I was 20 years old then. And the first 2 years of doing stuff, it was like from when I was 18 to 20. I think then I was just more interested in experimental music in general. And I think a little of the material then was a little bit more tongue-in-cheek, which I've tried to get away from entirely since then. So the first stuff was kind of trying to do experimental music intermixed with pop stuff, because I've always liked pop music, and it was kind of an idea to, you know, be able to make weird music, but at the same time have emotional content, have some nostalgic value to it, since there's all these pop music things tied in that people can recognize. And then from there, kind of, I think after that record was released, I started to play more shows. I think the live show kind of took control over what the sound was going to be like, because more and more I was just trying to make stuff that was more partyable, I guess, and just danceable. So I'd start getting into stuff that was more four floor, more cohesive, just as like kind of dance tunes. So I think that went on to the second album, which I think was moving more in the direction of still more accessible, but at the same time, kind of an interest in just messing with beats and just still kind of weird construction of songs. And that was released in 2004. And then I think from there, I think over the years, just as I played live more and more, it seemed like a higher demand just for straight up, less kind of experimental messing around and more just kind of party material. Seems like the pressure I felt on myself and kind of the direction I was going, because I think a lot of the reason I make music is just, you know, kind of friends and playing shows and getting feedback, and you obviously can't, you know, hide from that influence. So I think since then, just how my live shows develop musically has kind of geared towards what the albums have gone on to. So I think the new album's kind of just straight up like a party record with very little glitchy or experimental stuff. And even though I think it's composed really intensely, you know, there's a lot of editing, I think I just strayed away from anything. I don't know, I think it could be played on like mainstream radio if it came down to it. So I don't know, I think over the 6 years it's just kind of been a development from something experimental into something way more accessible.
No broke. Now I ain't saying she a gold digger, but she ain't messing with no broke. Get down, girl, gon' head, get down. Get down, girl, gon' head, get down. Get down, girl, gon' head, get down. Get down, girl, gon' head.
This is Some Assembly Required.
You're listening to Some Assembly Required.
It's the one and only Girl Talk. You know what I'm having with it, Girl Talk.
Yes, Girl Talk.
It's the one and only Girl Talk.
Girl Talk.
You know.
know I'm mopping with the girl talk.
Yes, go talk.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This in the club here on Some Assembler Required. That was Girl Talk off of 2004's Unstoppable, following Summer Smoke off of the 2006 Girl Talk release titled Night Ripper. We're going to get right back into it here with a bit from the interview about Girl Talk's live performances. More information online at www.some-assembly-required.net. Here's more from my interview with Greg Gillis, the man behind Girl Talk, here on Some Assembler Required.
So what are the live shows like? I've read a lot about them, but tell me a bit about the audience participation as well as how you recreate the songs in a live setting.
I don't know. I've always just wanted to come with a solid live show and not do stuff that's boring. So I think initially the first incarnation of live show, kind of a lot of props and a lot of extra dancers and synchronized dancing and outfit changes and lights and fireworks and stuff like that, which I'm still fully into. But I think I've toned that down a little bit recently just because I think most of the shows I've been playing, I've been kind of doing crossover shows just of recent where, you know, I'll play in a rock club one night and I'll play with some IDM dudes and laptops another night, and then I'll just play a dance club another night. So I've been playing more and more just dancey, clubby things where a live performance isn't even necessary just because, like, no one even, you know, needs to stare at you. The music's just kind of what they're listening to and dancing to. My whole thing is just, you know, pretty much DJing, like, 1,000 different loops on the fly, just mixing and matching on the go and just doing kind of different mashups and bootlegs and remixes and just tying everything together. And I pretty much don't play anything straight from the record at this point. So that's pretty much this live sound. And the actual live show, I think that's still, depending on the setting, you know, if people are standing stone cold and staring at me, then I feel the need to put on a performance. And there might be some clothes taken off of or dropping into the audience or breaking bottles or whatever. But if it's at a dance club situation and I don't feel any pressure to entertain people other than play the music, then that's kind of the way it's been going.
Mm-hmm. So you started out with a real interest in being experimental, and you've kind of become more listener-friendly in the subsequent years. Who are your earlier influences then? We've got a nice quote from Negative Land's Mark Hosler about your new record. Do you like bands like Negative Land? And
yeah, I mean, I've always listened to Negative Land, even from like my middle school days and stuff. You know, just I've never spoken to anyone in Negative Land, but just hearing that quote was just really funny to me that he even took the time to listen to a record of mine. You know, but I don't know. Initially, I can't deny like the Kid 666 influence on some of the early stuff. Just the Straight Outta Compton remix was something that was, I'm not a huge fan of a lot of his stuff, but that remix was, I think I heard that at some point in high school or something, and that was just, like, at the time, it kind of seems like whatever now, but at the time it seemed like a really punk-y thing to do, to just, like, drop up an NWA song. So that was kind of a heavy influence, and I don't know, I listened to just a ton of, it's hard to pin down any, as far as experimental influences. I don't know. I used to just listen to anything academic-y, and I don't know. It ran the whole spectrum. I mean, I can remember going to see like the Spice Girls and going to see Noise shows in the same week the time Secret Diary was being made. So, and as far as like plunderphonics-y sort of stuff, I don't know. Negative Land, of course, and Evolution Control Committee, who I used to played with a few times in an old band of mine before Girl Talk, and yeah, that's pretty much it. I've always just been into a variety of music, so it's hard to pinpoint down any influences from any particular genre. I like Wobbly a lot, Jason Forrest. I've liked all the stuff I've heard him do. I've kind of gotten, right now I've gotten a lot away from anything like, kind of like Shit Matter or anything like that, that's more just breakcore-y. I don't really listen to any music like that too much. I'm just, these days, I've just shied away almost entirely from listening to anything too experimental, other than potentially like some weird rock bands and stuff like that. But I try to pay attention to it at least, just so I'm not completely ignorant towards, you know, all these people who are kind of doing at least somewhat similar things to me.
So what genre would you put yourself in then, if you're not necessarily glomming onto the glitchcore thing?
These days I just pretty much think my music, there's mashups in it. The new album has the mashup by definition of, you know, one acapella from one song of our music from a different one. If that's it, I mean, there's the whole entire album's mashups. I mean, there's very little actual digital, like running anything through DSP or effects or anything like that on them. I mean, there is just tweaking this EQ stuff, but it's pretty much all collage-y straight up for the new record. So, I mean, genre, I think it's really pop music. I mean, it sounds to me, it's on a level of, I mean, I listen to the mainstream hip-hop stations pretty much all along, you know, most cities I go to, if you just listen to them on a Friday or Saturday night, it's kind of, you know, playing a minute of each song at the maximum and moving on. So it's kind of that in spirit, but executed a lot more ADD, because there's just, you know, about 10 to 20 songs every minute instead of one. So to me, it's pretty much just pop music, and there's a heavy mashup influence that is definitely on the record. But I don't know. I don't know what you'd call it genre-wise.
Yeah, it's a